A couple of three interesting texts about that interview. Your question shows remarkable lack of knowledge of how addiction works, says one. Or maybe just a bit of knowledge of how the child of an addict might feel. You might care to consider that view. Back when the homosexual law reforms came in, says another, a spokesman for them, well, this is a complicated text, right? Have a think about it. Back when the homosexual law reforms came in, a spokesman for them was asked, what do you want? And he said, just to be treated like normal people. Normal or heterosexual people don't spend their lives expounding their homosexuality. Well, obviously. Or having sexual orientation, i.e. pride parades. Wow, says another, your guest, this is Douglas Stewart's description of being the child of an addict, utterly resonates with my own experience of that very situation. His description of the tension between love and self-preservation was stunningly accurate. Hi, Kim, says Paul. What about vibration machines? That's quite enough of that. Oh, you mean for exercise? Ugh, nah. Well, I mean, vibration machines don't get your heart rate up, do they? I read the text saying that, you know, homosexuality, as opposed to being the love that dare not speak its name, will now shut up, or words to that effect. And I thought that it spoke for itself, really, but a lot of you have chosen to say such things as this. That person who was deriding pride parades by pointing out that straight people felt no need to have heterosexual parades was utterly missing the point. Mainstream culture, for example, Hollywood movies, is one continuous parade of heteronormative people extolling their lives. So one brief parade by LGBTQI is hardly some kind of questionable activity. And others came in to that effect regarding the texter, for example, saying that so-called normal people don't celebrate heterosexuality in pride parade styles. It isn't every day a pride parade. Isn't every day a pride parade for heterosexuals? See advertising and the dominant style of our media. Yes, I thought it was a very strange text that manages to miss a number of points all at the same time. Are you saying cube or tube? Somebody shouted at me. Cube. Cube. They poop in cubes. And I felt a poem coming on at the point where she said, a wombat's rump is very tough. Feel free to provide the following lines. Oh, you are waxing eloquent. I just want to read you this wombat email. It's from Chris. It says, in the early mid-1970s, I was the first park ranger in the Southwest National Park in Tasmania. There were many wombats, often inhabiting small dry ridges across the sedgeland plains. Normally, I would see them as they ran away, but one day I saw one which moved away, and then a few seconds after I moved on, I heard a noise behind me, and I turned to see the wombat charging full bore at me. I ran, but they can run really fast, and it hit me behind the shins, knocked me for six, and just ran on by. So I can confirm that their big, broad heads are every bit as hard as their rumps. And when I got to my feet and regained my composure, I saw it about 50 metres away with its cub. So it had been doing just what mothers do, protecting its young. It was interesting to hear a real explanation for their cube-shaped poo. I used to imagine them passing each one into its perfect shape. Too much time alone, obviously. Poems. A wombat's bum is very tough. That was my starting line I gave you. A wombat's rump is very tough. A wombat's bum is very tough, bum rump, whatever. It's made of lots of useful stuff, like piles of bone, sinew and fur, a round and fluffy butt burger. A wombat's bum is very tough, but watch out when it's in a huff. It can swipe and knock you to the floor and be its very own front door. A wombat's bum is very tough. A doorstop, a weapon, a battering ram. And if that's not astounding enough, its cuteness really is just a sham. A wombat rump is very tough. And if that info's not enough, it also excretes cubed-shaped poo. What an astonishing piece of news. What I took from that interview, says Bruce, the wombat rump is very tough. Its nose, however, is smooth enough. The ones out west are fairly hairy. In bed, they can be rather scary. A wombat's butt is very tough. He has a seat even in the buff. His exercise program is rather bleak, so his padded bot just helps him sleep. Somebody's taking me to task for describing the emperor penguin's unfaithful behaviour as worst. Why? Why are you describing it as worst? Because of some human-imagined Christian form of relationship? Arrogant, aren't we? Yes, we are. You know, yes. If this penguin book were held by the National Library, says Matthew, they would have thrown it away as it wasn't borrowed frequently enough. That's the penguin book that Lloyd was talking about. Levick's book and his field notes as well. Please avoid anthropomorphising animals. They hate it when you do that. And somebody says, I always suspected that penguins were quite sinister since I saw the shady penguin in Wallace and Gromit movie, The Wrong Trousers. This depravity of penguins, says Steve, is very interesting. But don't think they are the only filthy bastards out there. I'm a sheep and beef farmer, and I've seen things that might surprise you. Just let me read this text to see how far we can go here. Given how we hold the sheep up as a cute, lovable being whose image is sold to tourists. Oh, homosexuality is all right, isn't it? Infidelity is rife. One has to make sure that a stray female doesn't get in a large mob of rams. Yes, all right. I'm sorry, says Steve. I even felt compelled to tell you that. I know. Monomorphic penguins. The broadcaster who can say shag on RNZ might have asked, any gay penguins? Did you miss that bit? They're apparently all potentially gay. They are, as we say, possibly gender fluid.